Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 45 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the low 30s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-40s. Tomorrow night, cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to show number 2303 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
I think the one thing that distinguishes us from other industries is this is all personal to us. The things that we're creating, we use it on a daily basis for our own lives. And so there's a strong bond in this field of accessibility and those of us who are making software and using it, because it's at the end of the day, we all have to use it ourselves. And you don't find that in other industries.
And we've always said that if the people using the products develop the products, you wind up with a better product.
We'll be speaking with Ryan Jones, who recently stepped up to take on the role of Vice President of Software Products at Vispero, following the retirement of Eric Damery, who held that position for many years. We'll talk with Ryan about how his long career with Vispero has prepared him for this role and his outlook for the future of accessibility. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Ryan Jones.
My tip of the week is the JAWS command search. And this is something that's been in JAWS for quite a number of years, but is not very widely known about. So if you press insert space, so hold down the insert key, press the space bar, and then press the letter J for JAWS, you'll be taken to a box where you can type in something that you're looking for, some functionality of JAWS. So if you're using JAWS in Excel or a web browser and you can't remember what that keystroke is to do a certain thing, you can go to the JAWS command search and type in keywords or a phrase around what it is you're trying to do. And then you'll get a list of the JAWS commands related to the keyword that you searched for. So if you are in Excel, for example, and you're not sure what things can I do with JAWS around formulas, if you go to the command search and type in the word formula, you will then get a list of all the JAWS commands that have to do with formulas. So to read a formula or to edit a formula and so on. So try it out next time you're stumped on how to do something in JAWS or what keystroke to use for a particular thing. JAWS command search.
Oh, that just sounds like it makes working with JAWS so much more efficient. You don't have to spend all that time looking up somewhere else how to do what you used to know how to do, but you just slipped your mind.
It's like Google for JAWS.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
APHConnectCenter.org, empowering people toward independence and success by providing blogs, information, and resources for individuals of all ages who are blind or visually impaired. Information and referral line are at 1-800-232-5463.
You are listening to Eyes on Success.
Success. Success. Success. Success.
Let's start by meeting Ryan and learning about the involvement of people with vision loss in the creation of access technology at Vispero.
Hi, I'm Ryan Jones, Vice President of Software at Vispero.
And that's a fairly new position.
It is. I started in this role at the beginning of August when Eric Damery, who's been doing this for many years, retired at the end of July.
And unlike Eric, I understand you are a user of Vispero products.
I am. I actually grew up low vision, so when I was younger, I could read large print books. I could kind of see the TV screen if I was near to it. I used video magnifiers, books on tape, those kind of things, and screen magnification software until I was in my early 20s. And about that age, I lost most of the rest of my usable vision. And so I switched over to JAWS, and that was around the year 2000. So I think it was probably JAWS 3.5, maybe. And so it's been over 20 years now that I've been using JAWS and, you know, familiar with Zoom Text and other screen magnification software as well.
Well, as I always say to people, it's always a good thing to have users of the products also involved in the development of the products.
It is, and that's one of the really great things about working with Freedom Scientific Vispero is we have quite a lot of users that work on our products, especially on the software side. So we have people in all levels of development, technical support, all of our technical support team that works with JAWS or Zoom Text or low vision or blind, training, documentation, pretty much all aspects of the development, support, and creation of the software. We have quite a large amount of representation, actually, from people who are users of our products as well. So we depend on it for our own use every day, not just for creating it.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible in part by our corporate partners.
Find out more about partnership opportunities by sending an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is a bit about Ryan Jones's background, and then how Vispero maintains their product base and keeps up with ever-changing technology.
Well, Ryan, you've been with Freedom Scientific and Vispero for quite a long time. I think you joined in the early 2000s or so in their training department?
I did. I kind of call this my first real job when I got out of college. I had done a couple of other things for a short while, but I started in 2005. And interestingly, I originally applied at Freedom Scientific for an IT job. My bachelor's was in information systems management and computer science, so I thought I was going to do IT work. And so I applied for an IT job, ended up going down to interview and interviewed for the IT job. But while I was there, I learned that they were looking for someone to join Dan Clark in the training department doing software training. And I thought, well, that might be interesting. I've never done training, but I like working with people and things. And I obviously use the products myself. And so I interviewed for that while I was there. And we all ended up agreeing that the training job seemed like it might be the best fit for me. And so I started that in 2005. And I took a break from Freedom Scientific for a short time. For 3 years, I went and worked for one of the distributors of Freedom products, working to help bring assistive technology into the Caribbean region of the world. So Trinidad, Jamaica, different countries down there. I didn't live there. I lived in the Washington, D.C. area, but I did a lot of visits there in helping promote assistive technology and the doors that it can open for people who are blind or have low vision. So did that for a time, then came back to work at Freedom Scientific, stepped right back into my role as a trainer. Software trainer, mostly I did script writing training, JAWS, Magic, OpenBook, all the different products, and then transition for a time over to our enterprise accessibility consulting business as we started to develop that some years ago. So I ran a variety of projects around web accessibility, mobile app accessibility. I also focused in on kiosk accessibility quite a lot. So I was doing that right up until the time when Eric retired, and then I was able to step back over here.
Right. It seems like you spent your entire job training for your new position.
I think so. I think the variety of things that I've been able to do over the years really rounded my skill set out. I mean, if you're leading a team who's developing a product, the best way to learn about it is to teach other people about that product, your JAWS, for example. And that's what I did for a number of years. But then I also got the experience to see the other side of things, the corporate side, the companies who are having to deploy our products in large scale for their users. And so I think it's a definitely beneficial that I've seen this industry from a variety of angles.
So I'm used to the model where a lot of the sales reps are kind of local people that come to show the products to individuals or maybe blindness agencies, but it must be very different working with corporations. How do some of those interactions go? Do you have a corporation call you in and say, we have a number of blind people who need these type of services, or how does that start?
A lot of times it starts because they have users or people who have a disability, and they know that they need our product, but a lot of times they don't know how to deploy it, or they don't know how to best set it up for themselves. So for example, rather than if you have a company with 10,000 people and you have, say, 50 people using JAWS, rather than have 50 individual licenses and installations, you know, are there other ways that we could do that better? Could we set up a network? Could we set up a single license that allows all of them to use it at any given time? You know, there's a variety of things that oftentimes people just don't know about. And on the other side of that, the people who are using the software often have accessibility problems with applications they use at work, whether it's an HR system, a payroll system, or entering time off requests or logging their hours. Those kinds of applications may not always be accessible in a larger company. And so sometimes we can help them make those things more accessible either by JAWS scripting or by helping talk about how or teach them how to remediate those applications to be more accessible.
And I'm guessing the first line of attack there is to teach them how to use your existing products better. But if they work with some applications that maybe just are specific to their company or industry, will you actually write scripts for them? Will they hire you to do that?
They do, and that's part of what our TPGI or the Paciello Group Interactive, our consulting part of the business, that's exactly one of the things they specialize in, is writing scripts to help blind or low vision employees deal with applications that are not accessible that they have to deal with. And ideally, as you said, we want the company to fix the application so that it actually is accessible, and then the JAWS user, for example, doesn't need scripts. But the reality is that might take weeks, months, years, or maybe never happen, especially if it's not a program that that company controls. So scripts are a great way to get in there and help somebody get back to work immediately and to fix those accessibility gaps very, very quickly.
I don't know if you know, but we both work for a major corporation. We're research scientists at Xerox Corporation for a long time. And, you know, when I needed to deal with my accessibility needs, it was all on an individual basis. Although Xerox at the time was a company of 90,000 or 100,000 people, there weren't enough blind people in one place. And I'm wondering, in larger corporations, all the blind people aren't really localized in one place. And how does that work out?
It seems to start very, very grassroots, and it kind of goes from the bottom up, so to speak. So usually you'll have a person who, you know, they have a part of their job, they can't do it because the application they're trying to work with isn't accessible. And then maybe they reach out to their manager or to the HR department, and they're requesting some help with that. And then maybe that organization, that maybe a very tiny subset of a larger company, reaches out to a company like us. Well, you guys are the vendor who makes JAWS. Can you help us in this situation? We have someone who can't use this thing. And so then we get conversations started, and then maybe we can immediately help that one particular person, but then start to help them realize this application that they're using is used by 10,000 other people at the company. There may be others who are struggling with it and you just don't know about it, either because they're afraid to talk about it or, you know, maybe they're just kind of getting by. So let's look at how we can help you make this accessible overall so that anyone now or down the road will be able to use it. So oftentimes I see it start really small with one little problem and then start to bubble up from there as people realize accessibility really needs to be much broader than just one particular user or fixing a problem for one person.
So as software developers have become more attuned to accessibility needs over the years, have you found this process of engaging companies and working with people to be a better, more smoother interaction?
I think it's generally been easier to talk about it. So I think people have a base understanding better than they used to about accessibility. So they at least kind of know the terminology. They understand the concept of it. Now, once you get past sort of that initial conversation, they usually don't really know what you're talking about at that point. So there's a lot of education that comes into play. But you're right that people at least understand what accessibility means now, whereas 10 years ago, that term didn't even make sense to a lot of people.
So that gives us a good overview of how things work with commercial businesses. I guess another large part of your business is with vocational rehab agencies and state agencies. How is that different?
Yeah, I mean, in those areas, our job is to create software that is useful for people in a variety of circumstances, whether you're someone who is employed, whether you're someone going to school, whether you're just using the computer to check your email, look at Facebook, browse the web, whatever it may be. The state agencies are geared to provide technology for people in a variety of life circumstances. Most commonly, we know they're providing technology for people who are employed or looking to be employed. And then also for the homemaker programs and other later in life skill sets. And so often we're working with them just to help them to get access to JAWS or ZoomText or Fusion so that their clients can continue to do what they do. So mostly there, really what we're just trying to do is create our products to be beneficial for everyone. If you think of the name JAWS, the acronym Job Access with Speech, the first word there is job. So the emphasis with JAWS has always been around employment and making sure that we have a powerful tool to help someone be employed. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be able to use it for anything, even if you're not employed, if you're a student, if you're just working from home, just reading email, whatever it may be. We want to create functionality and features for people to use it.
Well, that's really important to focus on employment and functionality. I always make the distinction between programs being accessible and software being accessible versus efficient and productive to use. And I think JAWS in particular has had a real focus on that kind of productivity and efficiency. And just because I can get around the screen and see what's on the screen, if I have to tab around 100 times to find what I need, that doesn't place me on an equal playing field with my colleagues.
Yeah, you're not playing from the same field, as you said. And that's one of the things that's made JAWS powerful over its three decades, essentially, of existence. And sometimes people will ask, especially newer users or teachers and things, why do you have so many settings? Why are there all these things that I can configure in JAWS? And the answer is just that someone at some time needed that. And because employment is critical for any of us, those features and those settings and things that are there are geared to help people in those environments. And so sometimes a setting or a feature may not help everyone. In fact, it may only help a very tiny subset of our users. But for those subset of users, that setting or feature may be the difference in whether they can maintain their employment or not. And so that question comes up quite a lot. And that's what we always tell people is these things are here because it's the difference for people. And being able to tweak the way JAWS says something or the order that it reads it in, that can be very important when you're doing something, 10, 20, 100 times a day, for example.
Absolutely. Well, Ryan, now that you stepped into this new role at Vispero, tell us a little bit about what your vision for this new job and what you want to turn it into is.
My role is really to lead this wonderful team. So our products have been around for many, many years, and We have a phenomenal team of engineers that are creating the software. We have a phenomenal team of support staff who are taking phone calls and answering emails to support the products, and trainers and folks writing documentation. So we have a really good team that's been in place. And in fact, many of our team, I looked at the average tenure of the people that are on my team, and it's over 10 years, which is phenomenal. We've got quite a few that have been there for 25 plus years. And so my role is just to provide leadership to this team, kind of cast the vision. Where are we going with the software? They're the ones that do all the work. I will always say they're way smarter than I am. They're the ones actually doing it. And so my role is to provide that vision. So there's three areas that I think are really, really critical for us. And that's education. So at the education space, making sure that we have software that students can use to function in education, because we know that's where employment starts, is getting a proper education. So making sure that we're able to use our software in education environments and be adopted by students and teachers and be usable by those folks. That's a critical area for me. And then the workforce, the enterprise kind of government side of working for people who are working and employed. That's really our bread and butter of JAWS, and really where it started from. And so we will continue to do that. And so my role is looking at where do we think technology is going in the workplace. An example of that might be more things are going to virtual machines and sort of remote access type of environments. And so making sure that we can keep up with that and adapt our technology to work in those areas is very important. And then the third one would just be continuing to focus on productivity in our software to allow people to use it no matter what they're doing, whether they're, like I said, in school or at work or just at home doing whatever. And so things are changing. There's so much more that's web-based. So we have a lot of focus that we're going to be putting on how we're interacting with web content. And as I said, sort of the virtualization world, the cloud computing world, all of these things are, they're happening whether we all like it or not. And we basically have the choice to either ignore it and fall behind or keep up with it and provide leadership in this area around accessibility.
Did major tech companies ever give you guys advance notice of these upcoming changes so you can work on the potential fix before the break happens?
So we have really good partnerships with both Google and Microsoft, for example, and can get some of the updates first. Also, the good news is those tech companies now have a lot of accessibility resources in-house. So most of the time, they will catch things first, and then they'll collaborate with us.
Well, I think it's interesting. Just as I begin to think that my accessibility tools like JAWS and other tools are doing just the job they need to do and everything's perfect, then some change happens in technology or in operating systems, and all of a sudden there's a new paradigm of how people work and you have to change and update these tools. And so I guess you always have to be doing that.
And it's faster now than it's ever been before. And I'm sure you've experienced this too. I mean, just think about our web browsers we use, Chrome or Edge or Firefox. Those companies are pushing updates to those browsers, if not weekly, then every other week in a lot of cases. Microsoft Office is doing the same thing. They're pushing updates very, very quickly. And so there's always going to be this game of feature comes out or tweaks come out, and then we have to respond to it. And the good thing is that allows the larger companies like Microsoft, Google, and so on, it allows them to make accessibility enhancements or fix bugs faster. And that can be a good thing, but it also introduces more chance for things to break. And so it's sort of a double-edged sword. And so we have to constantly keep up with what the other tech companies are doing.
So you've just been talking about updates and upgrades to programs that are released by other tech companies. How often does JAWS get updated and upgraded?
Back in the, I guess you could say, old days, the old days being like 15, 20 years ago, you had to put updates out on a CD or a floppy disk way back. And so now with everything being on the web, we can push updates or create updates at a much faster pace. So we typically, each year, we always have the one major new version. So 2023, 2024, and so on. And that typically comes out in October. And then we usually have an update to the software about every 2 months. So those updates will contain fixes to bugs that we found, changes to our software based on whatever Windows or Office is doing, and then they'll contain new features. So the original cadence was we put new features in the main yearly release, the one-time-a-year release. That's where the new features came in. But now we don't put all the new features in that first release. We'll spread them out. So there'll be a brand new feature that may come out in February or April.
And I guess we should mention that this software can sometimes be pretty costly, but you've started introducing subscription options to make it more affordable for people these days.
Yes, and the great thing about it is for those who are not getting the software through a rehab agency or through your work or through some other mechanism where there's funding, we have what's called the Home Annual Program, and that's a subscription-based program. Just like if you subscribe to Netflix or other things, you can pay a yearly fee to have a subscription to either JAWS or ZoomText or Fusion. So, for example, JAWS, the cost is $95 per year. And then you have access to JAWS and any updates that come out while you have that subscription. So you're not tied to one particular version. You're tied to whatever is current at that time. You can use it and you can set it up so that it'll deduct from or bill your credit card once a year. You don't even have to do anything to it and you'll continue to have access to it. So that's been a really popular program for those who are not getting our software through other mechanisms. That is a program that's only available in the United States at this point, and we're looking at other ways that we might can use that in other countries. But right now it is unique to the United States, but it's been a great way to get people using the software who are having to pay out of pocket and not able to afford the full price of it.
And I have to thank Vispero and Freedom Scientific for making the products they do. I've been using them since the mid-90s, and I use the JAWS screen reader every day. I've used a variety of their braille displays and note takers, and they've been invaluable both professionally and at home. So thanks, guys.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about Vispero, its component companies, and their products, and how to contact them.
Well, Ryan, for people who are interested in learning more about the JAWS screen reader or the ZoomText magnification program or the combined product Fusion, where would you direct them?
I would say start with our website. If you go to www.freedomscientific.com, different software, you can download it. If you've never used any of it before, you can use it in a 40-minute demo mode. So it'll run for 40 minutes, and then you have to restart your computer, and then it would run again. So you can try it out. You can always use the home annual subscription program, like I mentioned, to kind of get started. But the website's the best way to learn. And I would say, for those who aren't really familiar, Vispero, we've kind of thrown these names around, right? Vispero, Freedom Scientific. Vispero is just a larger name of the company that owns a variety of sub-companies, so to speak. So Freedom Scientific, TPGI, Enhanced Vision, Optelect, those are all sort of sub-companies or brands that are part of the larger Vispero organization. So it could be a little bit confusing, but it's all the same company at the end of the day.
You have a social media presence?
You'll find Facebook. We have Freedom Scientifics on Facebook. There's actually JAWS user groups out there on Facebook where people are sharing and connecting together around software. You'd find us on Twitter, LinkedIn. We have a great YouTube channel. We have a lot of training videos and content there as well. So you'll find us most social media avenues. You'll find us there.
And if people wanted to reach you particularly, is there a way they can do that?
Yeah, and my personal email address, if anyone wants to email me, is rjones@vispero.com. So that's rjones@vispero, V-I-S-P-E-R-O.com. If you have an idea around what you'd like to see us do with our software, whether it's JAWS or ZoomText or Fusion, if you have a suggestion, you think, man, I'd really love to get this in the software, tell them about it, you can email me. This will go to several of us at Vispero, but email software suggestions all one word, software suggestions at vispero.com. That's a mailbox that I have access to and check regularly. And that's where we look to collect things, and can't promise that we'll get everybody's suggestion into our software, but I can tell you that we will look at it and consider it. So give me your ideas. Let me know what things you'd love to see in the products.
And of course, you can find all of that contact information in the show notes associated with episode 2303 at our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 2303. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking with the group that creates the equipment for Beep baseball players worldwide. We'll learn how the balls and other equipment are made, as well as about the surprising connection between Beep baseball and the telephone company. We'll speak with John Cruz, lead volunteer, and Jay Kelly, chapter president of the Colorado Legacy West Pioneers.
Well, thanks for joining us this week, and if you're interested to find out how the phone company is connected to Beep baseball, join us for next week's episode.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Men's Health, followed by USA Today at 2. Here's what's happening on the History Book Hour. Starting Wednesday, January 25th, we're reading Spare by Prince Harry, the Duke of Sussex. This month, this controversial biography has sold a record number of books and audiobooks. The Guinness World Records confirm it's the fastest-selling nonfiction book ever in its first day of publication. We also know it's the biggest-selling memoir ever in its first week of publication. At the age of 12, Harry lost his mother, Princess Diana. He struggled through school, then shone brightly in the British Army during his two combat tours. He found his true love, Meghan, an American. In the British press, Harry and Meghan's fairy tale wedding was washed away with waves of abuse, racism, and lies. Harry also alleges some of the same treatment from his royal family members, and he and Meghan eventually stepped back from royal duties and moved to the United States. Prince Harry narrates this story that's filled with unflinching, raw honesty. Some claim Harry is a complainer and a crybaby. You can judge for yourself as we begin the biography, Spare, beginning Wednesday, January 25th. The History Book Hour, every night at 9 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 46 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the low 30s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-40s. Tomorrow night, cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, and welcome to our program. My name is Peter Gilmore, and I'll be reading Men's Health Magazine, here on site, in the Sound Radio. And first up, the Cool Dad segment from Men's Health. This month, LeVar Burton stars in the final season of Star Trek Picard. It'll be out February 16th on Paramount. He's a children's literacy advocate and hosted Reading Rainbow on PBS for 23 seasons. The article, The Oldest Trick in the Book. If your kids are lucky, they'll learn to love reading, and that someday will also break your heart. There are three important stages when it comes to your kids and reading. All three are special, but the last one is gut-wrenching. The first stage is reading around your child. My mother was a voracious reader. She always had at least two books that she was reading concurrently, and one of them was usually a Louis L'Amour novel. Reading was a natural part of her everyday life, so it was a natural part of ours too. Parents ask me all the time, how do I get my kids to read more? And I ask them, how often do your kids see you reading? Without modeling, there can be no curiosity. The second stage is reading to your child. I started reading to my daughter, Micah, when my wife, Stephanie, was pregnant with her. A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving. You know, something light. I couldn't wait until she arrived to read stories to her. I wanted her to recognize my voice when she got here. I believe that storytelling is part of who we are as human beings. It's part of our culture as communal creatures. We share stories. When Micah grew into a toddler who could sit in my lap and turn the pages, that was the simplest act of intimacy we could share as parents and child. I will tell you, in the grand scheme of things, those lap moments were fleeting. If you have a child who will sit in your lap and listen to you as you read them a story, do that with them tonight. Do that every night, with gusto, because soon your lap will buckle under their weight and you'll be reading shoulder to shoulder with them in their too small for you bed, which is still special, but ultimately different. Micah and her mom read the Lemony Snicket series that way. I read Micah Harry Potter until he got to the part with the Dementors, and then she didn't want to read it because she was traumatized by the Dementors. I, too, was traumatized by having exposed her to the horror that is the Dementors. And then before I knew it, Micah had reached the last and final stage of reading. The third stage is watching your child read without you. The moment is bittersweet. You succeeded after all. You're thrilled, ecstatic, that the seed took hold. But you're sad. You have to mourn the loss when they came to you for story time. It's one of the first of many times in parenthood when you'll stand on the sidelines and watch your child walk away. You just have to trust you've done enough. And if they're reading, you have. Micah is 28 now. We talk about what we're reading, but the days of reading around her, or to her, are long gone. And while I haven't gone back to rereading any of the books she and I read together when she was young, I've been wondering if it's time just to relive some of those moments I share with her. Maybe I'll even pick up Harry Potter series again and see if I can make it past the Dementors. Next up, The Quitter's Guide to Winning. So many New Year's resolutions focus on that first word, new. New job, new body, new attitude. What if you choose something to drop instead? These guys did, and they turned into a whole new man. First up, I Quit Toxic Fandom by Matt Miller, a pop culture critic. There are two vivid memories that come to define my relationship with Star Wars. In one, I'm a kid, running around with a wrapping paper tube, having lightsaber fights with my dad. In another, I'm getting harassed by anonymous toxic Star Wars fans on the internet. I watched misogynist, racist fans harass the women and actors of color in the movies. And since I grew up to be a pop culture critic who wrote about Star Wars, they attacked me too. They even threatened my partner and me. In theory, experts say, gathering of people with a shared interest should have a sense of community. But social media has made bullying and harassment easier. Stepping back is basically a self-care skill. So I stopped looking at the fan sites, the films, the message boards, all of it. After about a year, you could say a new force awakened in me. I found myself kind of excited to watch the latest shows on my own terms. I don't have to know or care what other people think. and I'm a fan of that. Next, I Quit Single-Use Plastics by Joseph Macrino, co-founder of Re Grocery. My father was not particularly into sustainability growing up. But when I moved to San Francisco in 2007, sustainability seemed like the standard there. One of the most progressive waste management companies in the country, Recology, is there. And it offers dump tours, so you can see how much work goes into sorting trash. After I went on one in 2013, I realized all the plastic that's ever been produced is still on the planet today. So I made a point to try and avoid single-use plastics, like straws, stir sticks, utensils, and food packaging. It came down to small decisions. Bring your own reusable mug. Don't forget a reusable bag. Eat in instead of taking out. If I needed some salsa for a gathering, I'd drop into a taqueria with a mason jar and have it filled up. If I needed some pita, I'd swing by the falafel joint on the way home with a cotton bag. It was a good start, but lots of the stuff we use daily is still sold in plastics or containers or shrink wrap. When my apartment burned down in 2014, my wife, then girlfriend, and I took it as an opportunity for a fresh start, and we moved to Los Angeles. That's when the real inspiration hit. We opened Re Grocery, a package-free market, on April 22, 2020, Earth Day. We have eggs, plant-based cheese, oils and vinegars, and more. You can buy as much or as little as you like. It is my hope we can leave this planet better than we found it. We say it's about the little steps, little changes in your behavior. You may not be perfect, but the actions add up. Next up, I Quit Ghosting People by Zachary Zane, a sex columnist for Men's Health. Telling someone you're just not that into them is awkward as hell, which is why ghosting, in other words, ceasing all communications and dropping off the face of the earth, exists. But I'm here to tell you that a straightforward break is your best approach. I wasn't always the enlightened rejecter I am now. During college, if I wasn't feeling it, my primary way to end things was a method I called the Peter Out, which looked something like this. Them. Hey, that was fun. Are you free this week? Me. Waits 48 hours, respond. Ooh, this week is looking really busy. Absolutely don't offer another time to hang out, or apologize for taking 2 days to reply. Them. Okay, how about next week? Me. Waits 72 hours to respond this time. Honestly, next week isn't any less busy. All communications then cease. I managed to convince myself that this was the most ethical approach, until someone called me out. I've been doing the usual for 2 weeks, until she texted me, point blank, are you into me or not? I took the out. No, I'm not. I texted back. That's fine, she replied. But I wish you had just told me, because these last few weeks have been really poopy and confusing. At that moment, it became clear that the peter out was simply cowardice. Since then, I've tried to be more upfront. I messaged them something along the lines of, hey, I had a fun time getting to know you, but I'm sadly not feeling that spark, so I'd like to stop dating. Regardless of how they react, it's better knowing that while they may be hurt in the moment, I'm saving them the pain and confusion that comes from prolonging the inevitable. And there's some solace in that. And now, for the men's health experts, 3 more quit-to-win moves. 1. How to quit caffeine. If your goal is to feel less anxious and jittery, or sleep better, you might want to consider it. Here's how to do so, without the headaches. Don't just stop. That will be brutal. addition to fatigue, merely dropping the stuff can lead to headaches. That's according to Andy DeSantis, a dietitian in Toronto. Instead, for 1 week, aim to cut caffeine by 20%. It's an easy strategy. Fill each cup of your caffeinated beverage 4/5 of the way. Reduce is a little more over every week until you're off caffeine altogether. Find yourself a different pick-me-up. Try some stairs. In one study, sleep-deprived people who climbed stairs for 10 minutes felt more energized than when they downed 50 milligrams of caffeine. Also, talk with someone. Research found that sleep-deprived pilots acted more alert after a 7-minute break that included a walk and a chat. 2. How to quit your therapist. Before you break up, give the therapist an opportunity to fix what's not working. Say what's wrong. It's important to let your therapist know that you need that are not happening. If that's too uncomfortable to address in a session, leave them a voicemail. And be factual. If the therapist does not or cannot make adjustments, it's fine to say, "I would like for this to be our last session. I don't think we're a good fit." And finally, 3, how to quit vaping. Cold turkey is the most miserable and least effective way to stop. That's according to Dr. Amanda Graham. If you feel lousy, you'll want nicotine again. The objective is to go without it little by little. So go gradually. Over a week, aim to cut your nicotine use in half, says Graham. Try designating how long you'll wait between a craving and a hit. These mini quits give people an opportunity to develop skills for when cravings hit. See if you can completely quit in 2 weeks. Find something else to say yes to. Don't just try to resist a craving. Plan what you do when one comes. Drinking ice water can break the focus of your vape. So can actions like walking, doing jumping jacks, chewing on flavored toothpicks, or squeezing a stress ball. And finally, get help. Writing down why you want to quit helps carry you through the hard moments of staying focused. Support groups and nicotine replacement therapy can also help, along with medicines designed to make this easier. I need to take a break here to remind you that you're listening to Men's Health Magazine on site in the Sound Radio. You can listen to site and sound on channel HD4 on 88.7 KUHF, channel 8.4 on TV, streaming on your computer or smartphone, as well as on Amazon Alexa and Google Home devices. You can also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at siteinthesound.org. We are Sight into Sound Radio since 1967. Next, the country rock star who performs his own sobriety check. Charles Keeley, the lead singer of Nashville's heavyweight Lady A, has come a long way in recovery with a lot of help from fans, bandmates, and support groups. The pros and cons of being a sober country star are well balanced. On one hand, if you slip up, some guy in some bar who is quick with his phone will make sure everyone knows it. On the other hand, the resources available to you are unbounded, and you can call up Tim McGraw for advice. But the refrains of sobriety often sound the same whether you're a 41-year-old Charles Keeley, lead singer of Lady A, or one of the folks in his audience. In almost every story, there's a tinge of similarity, Keeley says. He's been attending men's recovery meetings for several months now, listening to stories of others. How you can justify it. How you can hide your drinking. How you say, "Oh, I just had a couple on the golf course," which really meant 6. Likewise, with just one glass of wine, which is what Kelly told his wife. Over dinner in Paris this past spring, he'd been trying to quit drinking, quote, "on my own," he says, since January 2022. It was his third attempt at sobriety, The first two was 6 or 7 years ago, at the urging of his bandmates, Hillary Scott and Dave Haywood. After that dinner, he slipped back into a cycle of escalating drinking. Once he was home, it was 2 glasses, then 3. Then he was right back in it. That jammed to a halt this past summer, when he and Cassie were on vacation with friends in Greece. Kelly doesn't feel he ever had that proverbial crashing a car into a ditch rock bottom. But this time, his decision to stop drinking felt different. "This is actually the first time I put tools in place," he told his bandmates, after witnessing previous attempts. "There would be no more on my own." We speak one morning in October. Kelly has been sober for a little more than 3 months, a triumph he largely attributes the support of the people around him. He is sitting in his high-ceilinged home in Nashville, framed by 2 big arched white-grilled windows with white curtains, next to an ornate gold lamp with a black shade. A Best Dad Ever plaque sits on the table behind him. The Kellys have a 6-year-old son. Kelly wears a gray hoodie and looks very awake, partly because he's been sleeping much better these past few months. It's amazing what not drinking will do. I'm ashamed to say anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 calories a day in booze. You're bound to lose some weight. But look back at pictures from just 3 months ago. It's my face. It's my midsection. I found that it all goes hand in hand. When I'm not drinking, I feel better. So then I work out. He exercises 6 days a week now. As 5 o'clock approaches, with its shaft of warm golden hour light, perhaps previously enjoyed with a glass of wine, Kelly often goes for a run to distract himself. Little by little, these habits come in, and then they're natural-like. "Well, I'm working out, not drinking." I'm starting to see results. He does have one indulgence. My wife bought me an ice cream maker, and I unapologetically every night will destroy almost a pint of ice cream. I'm just like, "Listen, I gotta have something." He also estimates he now drinks about 15 cans of LaCroix water a day. When Kelly and his wife returned from Greece, they immediately shared his decision with one of Lady A's managers, Kaylee Cunningham Nobel. Nobel knew she was out of her depth. She had no experience shepherding someone through a road recovery. "My personality is to fix a problem when it arises, and so what I've got to come to terms is that definitely cannot fix this." But she did have a wide network, and she quickly called upon contacts at Porter's Call, a Tennessee nonprofit to provide resources for artists. A day later, Kelly was headed to a treatment center. Nobel is now working on the logistical scaffolding that will allow Lady A to tour again, since the band postponed its request line tour so that Kelly could go focus on recovery. The tour will be dry, adding quickly that he does not extend to the audience. He remembers finding it odd when he was younger, when Lady A would open for artists who had no alcohol on the bus, backstage, or in the dressing rooms. Now he gets it. "They've been doing this for 15, 20 years, in the same spot that I am right now," he says. "What do you want out of this life? Do you want to wreck your family and your career? Or you want to put something into place to keep it successful?" Cassie, too, has orientated her life around recovery. A few weeks after her husband entered treatment, the facility held a family week, which she attended. When you start sort of taking away the layers of "this is the family disease of alcoholism, I have to do as much as work as he does." My first reaction was, "Well, this doesn't seem fair," she says, laughing. And she's attended meetings and learned more about recovery, the scope of alcoholism affects its personal life, even, especially, on a spouse, has shocked her. She is focused on benevolent detachment, a strategy that discourages those close to an alcoholic from trying to control the behavior, instead prioritizing their own well-being, which is much easier said than done. The way I kind of handled it prior was like, oh gosh, had to control this more. Had to try and control his surroundings and who he's with. You end up driving yourself crazy, trying to control another person and every aspect of their life. But in fact, that's not what works. You have to detach more and just let them make their own decisions, good or bad, and let them face the consequences, good or bad. Kelly realized that although he could white-knuckle it for 3 months, maybe even a year, on self-determination and willpower alone, he needed help. But he has longevity in mind, as well as his son, for whom he is determined to be a sober dad. And he knows that he needs the support to get there. It's my second half of life. I've lived 25 years one way, and I was really freaking fun. It was awesome, he says, with the caveat that there were some dark moments too. Now I've got this whole second half. All right, that was fun. I did that. Now I'm ready to do this. Now advice on living large and lean times. Inflation sucks, but rising prices don't have to cut into your health habits. We asked experts from our advisory panel about how they're saving money without sacrificing their well-being. Keith Roach says, for medications, I'm looking at online sites like GoodRx.com, since sometimes prices with these coupons are less than my copays with my insurance. Robert Glatter says, I try to adhere to a 24-hour rule. For any non-essential item, I wait a day before buying. Items can remain in my cart as I reconsider if I truly need them. Dan Giordo says, for groceries, our house, we're buying more whole food options and less luxury snacks. We try to cook all meals every day, and we do it together and get to spend quality time doing so away from our mobiles. Also, our dog Boris always gets a taste of the protein option. Morelli Dorusky, doctor, I vacation in Mexico, where the dollar goes farther. Dr. Adnar Nasser, I like Truebill, now called Rocket Money. It's an app that allows for budgeting, keeping track of earnings, savings, and spendings, and it helps get rid of unused or unwanted subscriptions. And finally, Ava Klein, psychotherapist. I drink way less alcohol. This has created a social dilemma. That's my main way of seeing friends is over dinner or drinks. But now we go for a walk. Not only is this 100 times healthier, but the conversations are less jokey, less noisy, and after we warmed up, more vulnerable. Well, we have come to the end of our program. I've been reading Men's Health magazine. I'm Peter Gilmore. And this has been a production of Sight Into Sound Radio, Houston, Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3. This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Sunday Movie Matinee, a film by the Coen Brothers, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Daddy!
Hello, sugar.
How's my little girl?
He ain't our daddy.
I am the only daddy you got. I am the damn paterfamilias.
Now Mama's got a new boat.
Brother here's got a job. Brother's got prospects. He's bona fide. What are you?
You can't marry him.
Why can't I? Am and I will.
This gentleman bothering you?
Well, you can't marry my wife.
And stay out of the Woolworth.
To get back to his wife and kids, Ulysses Everett McGill would do anything.
Hey, any boy, Smitty.
He's about to get off on the wrong track.
Who elected you leader of this outfit?
Well, Pete, I figured it should be the one with the capacity for abstract thought.
Boys, you just stick with me.
Man, we're in a tight spot.